stories this evening. We're featuring the work of Rudyard Kipling, and we're going to start off with a piece called The Cat That Walked By Himself.
Hear and attend and listen. For this befell and behappened and became and was, oh, my best beloved, when the tame animals were wild. The dog was wild and the horse was wild, and the cow was wild, and the sheep was wild, and the pig was wild as wild could be. And they walked in the wet wild woods by their wild lones. But the wildest of all the wild animals was the cat. He walked by himself and all places were alike to him. Of course, the man was wild, too. He was dreadfully wild. He didn't even begin to be tame until he met the woman.
Hello.
She told him that she did not like living in his wild ways. She picked out a nice dry cave instead of a heap of wet leaves to lie down in. And she strewed clean sand on the floor. And she lit a nice fire of wood at the back of the cave. And she hung a dried wild horse skin, tail down, across the opening of the cave. And she said,
"Wipe your feet, dear, when you come in."
"Why, certainly."
"And now we'll keep house."
That night, best beloved, they ate wild sheep roasted on the hot stones and flavored with wild garlic and wild pepper and wild duck stuffed with wild rice and wild fenugreek. Then the man went to sleep in front of the fire, ever so happy. But the woman sat up combing her hair. She took the bone of the shoulder of mutton, the big fat blade bone, and she looked at the wonderful marks on it, and she threw more wood on the fire, and she made a magic. She made the first singing magic in the world. Out of the wet wild woods, all the wild animals gathered together where they could see the light of the fire a long way off, and they wondered what it meant. The wild horse stampered with his wild foot and said,
"Oh, my friends and oh, my enemies, why have the man and the woman made the great light in that great cave? And what harm will it do us?"
Wild dog lifted up his wild nose and smelled the smell of roast mutton and said,
"I will go up and look and see, for I think it is good. Cat, come with me."
"Nimmy,"
said the cat,
"I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me. I will not come."
"Then we can never be friends again,"
said the wild dog, and he trotted off to the cave. But when he had gone a little way, the cat said to himself,
"All places are alike to me. Why should I not go too and see and look and come away at my own liking?"
So he slipped after the wild dog softly, very softly, and hid himself where he could hear everything. When wild dog reached the mouth of the cave, he lifted up the dried horse skin with his nose and sniffed the beautiful smell of the roast mutton. And the woman, looking at the blade bone, heard him and laughed and said,
"Here comes the first. Wild thing out of the wild woods, what do you want?"
"Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy, what is this that smells so good in the wild woods?"
Then the woman picked up a roasted mutton bone and threw it to Wild Dog and said,
"Wild thing out of the wild woods, taste and try."
Wild Dog gnawed the bone, and it was more delicious than anything he had ever tasted, and he said,
"Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy, give me another."
The woman said,
"Wild thing out of the wild woods, help my man to hunt through the day and guard this cave at night, and I will give you as many roast bones as you need."
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening,
"this is a very wise woman, but she is not so wise as I am."
Wild dog crawled into the cave and laid his head on the woman's lap and said,
"Oh, my friend and wife of my friend, I will help your man to hunt through the day, and at night I will guard your cave."
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening,
"that is a very foolish dog."
And he went back through the wet wild woods, waving his wild tail and walking by his wild lone. But he never told anybody. When the man waked up, he said,
"What is Wild Dog doing here?"
And the woman said,
"His name is not Wild Dog anymore, but the First Friend, because he will be our friend for always and always and always. Take him with you when you go hunting."
Next night, the woman cut great green armfuls of fresh grass from the water meadows and dried it before the fire so that it smelt like new mown hay. And she sat at the mouth of the cave and plaited a halter out of horsehide. And she looked at the shoulder of mutton bone, at the big, broad blade bone, and she made a magic. She made the second singing magic in the world. Out in the wild woods, all the wild animals wondered what had happened to Wild Dog. And at last, Wild Horse stampered with his foot and said,
"I will go and see and say why Wild Dog has not returned. Cat, come with me."
"Nanny,"
said the cat,
"I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me. I will not come."
But all the same, he followed Wild Horse softly. Very softly, and hid himself where he could hear everything. When the woman heard Wild Horse tripping and stumbling on his long mane, she laughed and said,
"Here comes the second. Wild thing out of the wild woods, what do you want?"
Wild Horse said,
"Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy, where is Wild Dog?"
The woman laughed and picked up the blade bone and looked at it and said,
"Wild thing out of the wild woods, you did not come here for Wild Dog, but for the sake of this good grass."
And Wild Horse, tripping and stumbling on his long mane, said,
"That's true. Give it to me to eat."
The woman said,
"Wild thing out of the wild woods, bend your wild head and wear what I give you, and you shall eat the wonderful grass 3 times a day.
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening,
"this is a very clever woman, but she is not so clever as I am."
Wild Horse bent his wild head, and the woman slipped the halter over it. And Wild Horse breathed on the woman's feet and said,
"Oh, my mistress and wife of my master, I will be your servant for the sake of the wonderful grass."
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening,
"that is a very foolish horse."
And he went back through the wet wild woods, waving his wild tail and walking by his wild lone. But he never told anybody. When the man and the dog came back from hunting, the man said,
"What is Wild Horse doing here?"
And the woman said,
"His name is not Wild Horse anymore, but the First Servant, because he will carry us from place to place for always and always and always. Ride on his back when you go hunting."
Next day, holding her wild head high that her wild horns should not catch in the wild trees, Wild Cow came up to the cave. And the cat followed and hid himself just the same as before. And everything happened just the same as before. And the cat said the same things as before. And when Wild Cow had promised to give her milk to the woman every day in exchange for wonderful grass, the cat went back through the wet wild woods, waving his wild tail, and walked by his wild lone, just the same as before. But he never told anybody. And when the man and the horse and the dog came home from hunting and asked the same questions, same as before, the woman said,
"Her name is not Wild Cow anymore, but the giver of good food. She will give us the warm white milk for always and always and always. And I will take care of her while you and the first friend and the first servant go hunting."
Next day, the cat waited to see if any other wild animal would go up to the cave. But no one moved in the wet wild woods. So the cat walked there by himself. And he saw the woman milking the cow. And he saw the light of the fire in the cave. And he smelt the smell of the warm white milk. Cat said,
"Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy, where did Wild Cow go?
The woman laughed and said, "Wild thing out of the wild woods, go back to the woods again. For I have braided up my hair, and I have put away the magic blade bone, and we have no more need of either friends or servants in our cave."
Cat said,
"I'm not a friend, and I am not a servant. I am the cat who walks by himself, and I wish to come into your cave."
"Then why did you not come with the first friend on the first night?"
Cat grew very angry and said,
"Has Wild Dog told tales of me?"
Then the woman laughed and said,
"You are the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to you. You are neither a friend nor a servant. You have said it yourself. Go away and walk by yourself, and all places alike."
The cat pretended to be sorry and said,
"Must I never come into the cave? Must I never sit by the warm fire? Must I never drink the warm white milk? You are very wise and very beautiful. You should not be cruel even to a cat."
Woman said,
"I knew I was wise, but I did not know I was beautiful. So I will make a bargain with you. If I ever say one word in your praise, you may come into the cave."
"And if you say two words in my praise?"
"I never shall. But if I say two words in your praise, you may sit by the fire."
"And if you say three words?"
"I never shall. But if I say three words in your praise, you may drink the warm white milk three times a day, for always and always and always."
Then the cat arched his back and said,
"Now let the curtain at the mouth of the cave, and the fire at the back of the cave, and the milk pots that stand beside the fire remember what my enemy and the wife of my enemy has said."
And he went away through the wet wild woods, waving his wild tail and walking by his wild lone. That night, when the man and the horse and the dog came home from hunting, the woman did not tell them of the bargain that she had made with the cat, because she was afraid that they might not like it.
Meow.
Cat went far and far away and hid himself in the wet wild woods by his wild lone for a long time, till the woman forgot all about him. Only the bat, the little upside-down bat that hung inside the cave, knew where the cat hid. And every evening the bat would fly to the cat with news of what was happening. One evening, Bat said,
"There's a baby in the cave. He is new and pink and fat and small. And the woman is very fond of him."
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening.
"But what is the baby fond of?"
"He's fond of things that are soft and tickle. He is fond of warm things to hold in his arms when he goes to sleep. He is fond of being played with,"
said the bat.
"He is fond of all those things."
"Ah,"
said the cat, listening.
"Then my time has come."
Next night, Cat walked through the wet wild woods and hid very near the cave till morning time. And man and dog and horse went hunting. The woman was busy cooking that morning, and the baby cried and interrupted. So she carried him outside the cave and gave him a handful of pebbles to play with. But still the baby cried. Then the cat put out his patty paw and patted the baby on the cheek, and it cooed. And the cat rubbed against its fat knees and tickled it under its fat chin with his tail. And the baby laughed, and the woman heard him and smiled. Then the bat, the little upside-down bat that hung in the mouth of the cave, said,
"Oh, my hostess and wife of my host, and mother of my host's son, a wild thing from the wild woods is most beautifully playing with your baby."
"A blessing on that wild thing, whoever he may be,"
said the woman, straightening her back.
"For I was a busy woman this morning, and he has done me a service."
The very minute and second, best beloved, the dried horse-skin curtain that was stretched tail down at the mouth of the cave fell down, whoosh, because it had remembered the bargain she had made with the cat. And when the woman went to pick it up, lo and behold, the cat was sitting quite comfy inside the cave.
"Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy and mother of my enemy,"
said the cat,
it is I, for you have spoken a word in my praise. And now I can sit in the cave for always and always and always. But still, I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me.
The woman was very angry and shut her lips tight and took up her spinning wheel and began to spin. But the baby cried because the cat had gone away and the woman could not hush it, for it struggled and kicked and grew black in the face.
Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy and mother of my enemy,
said the cat.
Take a strand of the wire that you are spinning and tie it to your spinning wheel and drag it along the floor, and I will show you a magic that shall make your baby laugh as loudly as he is crying now.
I will do so, because I am at my wit's end, but I will not thank you for it.
She tied the thread to the little clay spindle whirl and drew it across the floor. And the cat ran after it and patted it with his paws and rolled head over heels and tossed it backward over his shoulder and chased it between his hind legs and pretended to lose it and pounced down upon it again till the baby laughed as loudly as it had been crying and scrambled after the cat and frolicked all over the cave till it grew tired and settled down to sleep with the cat in its arms.
Now,
said the cat,
I will sing the baby a song that shall keep him asleep for an hour.
And he began to purr loud and low, low and loud, till the baby fell asleep. The woman smiled as she looked down upon the two of them and said,
That was wonderfully done. No question, but you are very clever, O cat.
That very minute and second, best beloved, the smoke of the fire at the back of the cave came down in clouds from the roof, because it remembered the bargain she had made with the cat. And when it had cleared away, lo and behold, the cat was sitting quite comfy close to the fire.
Enemy and wife of my enemy and mother of my enemy,
said the cat.
It is I, for you have spoken a second word in my praise. And now I can sit by the warm fire at the back of the cave for always and always and always. But still, I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me.
Then the woman was very, very angry and let down her hair and put more wood on the fire and brought out the broad blade bone of the shoulder of mutton and began to make a magic that should prevent her from saying a third word in praise of the cat. It was not a singing magic, best beloved. It was a still magic. And by the cave grew so still that a little wee, wee mouse crept out of a corner and ran across the floor.
Oh, my enemy and wife of my enemy and mother of my enemy,
said the cat.
Is that little mouse part of your magic?
Oh, gee, no indeed,
said the woman. And she dropped the blade bone and jumped upon the footstool in front of the fire and braided up her hair very quick for fear that the mouse should run up it.
Ah,
said the cat, watching.
Then the mouse will do me no harm. I eat it.
No,
said the woman, braiding up her hair.
Eat it quickly and I will ever be grateful to you.
Cat made one jump and caught the little mouse, and the woman said,
100 thanks. Even the first friend is not quick enough to catch little mice as you have done. You must be very wise.
That very moment and second, oh, best beloved, the milk pot that stood by the fire cracked in two pieces because it remembered the bargain she had made with the cat. And when the woman jumped down from the footstool, lo and behold, the cat was lapping up the warm white milk that lay in one of the broken pieces.
My enemy and wife of my enemy and mother of my enemy,
said the cat.
It is I, for you have spoken 3 words in my praise, and now I can drink the warm white milk 3 times a day for always and always and always. But still,
I am a cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me.
Then the woman laughed and set the cat a bowl of warm white milk and said,
Oh, cat, you are as clever as a man. But remember that your bargain was not made with the man or the dog. And I do not know what they will do when they come home.
What is that to me?
Said the cat.
If I have my place in the cave by the fire and my warm white milk 3 times a day, I do not care what the man or dog can do.
That evening when the man and the dog came into the cave, the woman told them all the story of the bargain while the cat sat by the fire and smiled. Then the man said,
Yes, but he has not made a bargain with me or with all proper men after me.
Then he took off his 2 leather boots and he took up his little stone axe, that makes 3, and he fetched a piece of wood and a hatchet, that is 5 altogether, and he set them out in a row and he said,
Now we will make our bargain. You do not catch mice when you are in the cave, for always and always and always I will throw these 5 things at you whenever I see you, and so shall all proper men do after me.
Ah,
said the woman, listening.
This is a very clever cat, but he is not so clever as my man.
The cat counted the 5 things, and they looked very knobby, and he said,
I will catch mice when I am in the cave. For always and always and always, but still I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me.
Not when I am near,
said the man.
If you had not said that last, I would have put all these things away for always and always and always. But now I am going to throw my 2 boots and my little stone axe, that makes 3, at you whenever I meet you. So shall all proper men do after me.
Then the dog said,
Wait a minute. He has not made a bargain with me or with all proper dogs after me.
And he showed his teeth and said,
You are not kind to the baby while I am in the cave for always and always and always. I will hunt you till I catch you. And when I catch you, I will bite you. And so shall all proper dogs do after me.
Ah, said the woman, listening. This is a very clever cat, but he is not so clever as the dog.
Cat counted the dog's teeth, and they looked very pointed. And he said,
To the baby where I am in the cave, as long as he does not pull my tail too hard for always and always and always. But still I am the cat who walks by himself, and all places are alike to me.
Not when I am near. If you had not said that last, I would have shut my mouth for always and always and always. But now I'm going to hunt you up a tree whenever I meet you, and so shall all proper dogs do after me.
Then the man threw his 2 boots and his little stone axe, that makes 3, at the cat, and the cat ran out of the cave, and the dog chased him up a tree. And from that day to this, best beloved, 3 proper men out of 5 will always throw things at a cat whenever they meet him, and all proper dogs will chase him up a tree. But the cat keeps his side of the bargain, too. He will kill mice, and he will be kind to the babies when he is in the house, just as long as they do not pull his tail too hard. But when he has done that, and in between times, and when the moon gets up and the night comes, he is the cat that walks by himself, and all places are alike to him. Then he goes out to the wet wild woods, or up the wet wild trees, or on the wet wild roofs, waving his wild tail and walking by his wild lone.
You've been listening to The Cat That Walks By Himself, written by Rudyard Kipling. In our 3D radio players, we are featuring our junior gremlins, Sky Blue, Slime Green, Cowboy Ethan, and as the cat, we had Sunny Day. Also featuring our new gremlin, Madison Gray, along with our old-time regulars, Umatilla Rose and Payne's Gray. Featuring in the music in the background is a KBOO regular who passed away about a year ago, Sid Brown, with percussionist Steve Omdahl. But Sid Brown on guitar through all of the pieces on the last piece. For our next story, we also have a special musical contribution. Mishkin has put the two poems that preface this piece to music. And so we're going to start off and we'll end with the pieces by Mishkin. I'd like to thank you for doing that. And Woody Creek is now up next, and we'll be reading the very famous short story, Rikki Tikki Tavi, by Rudyard Kipling.
At the hole where he went in, red eye cold, wrinkled skin, hear what little red eye say. Head, keep the measure, neck. This shall end when one is dead at thy pleasure, neck. Turn for turn and twist for twist, run and hide the neck. Ah, the hooded death has missed. Woe betide thee, neck.
This is the story of the great war that Rikki Tikki Tavi fought single-handed through the bathrooms of the big bungalow in Sigauli Containment. Darzi, the tailor bird, helped him, and Chuchundra, the muskrat, who never comes out into the middle of the floor but always creeps round by the wall, gave him advice. But Rikki Tikki did the real fighting. He was a mongoose, rather like a little cat in his fur and his tail, but quite like a weasel in his head and his habits. His eyes and the end of his restless nose were pink. He could scratch himself anywhere he pleased with any leg, front or back, that he chose to use. He could fluff up his tail till it looked like a bottle brush, and his war cry as he scuttled through the long grass was, "Rick, tick, tick, ticky, tick, tick, tick." One day, a high summer flood washed him out of his burrow where he lived with his father and mother, and carried him, kicking and clucking, down a roadside ditch. He found a little wisp of grass floating there and clung to it till he lost his senses. When he revived, he was lying in the hot sun on the middle of a garden path, very draggled indeed, and a small boy was saying, "Here's a dead mongoose. Let's have a funeral." "No," said his mother. "Let's take him in and dry him. Perhaps he isn't really dead." They took him into the house, and a big man picked him up between his finger and thumb and said he was not dead, but half choked. So they wrapped him in cotton wool and warmed him over a little fire, and he opened his eyes and sneezed. "Now," said the big man, he was an Englishman who had just moved into the bungalow, "don't frighten him, and we'll see what he'll do." It is the hardest thing in the world to frighten a mongoose, because he is eaten up from nose to tail with curiosity. The motto of all the mongoose family is, "Run and find out." And Rikki Tikki was a true mongoose. He looked at the cotton wool, decided that it was not good to eat, ran all round the table, sat up and put his fur in order, scratched himself, and jumped on the small boy's shoulder. "Don't be frightened, Teddy," said his father. "That's his way of making friends." "Ouch! He's tickling under my chin," said Teddy. Rikki Tikki looked down between the boy's collar and neck, snuffed at his ear, and climbed down to the floor where he sat, rubbing his nose. "Good gracious," said Teddy's mother, "and that is a wild creature. I suppose he's so tame because we've been kind to him." "All mongooses are like that," said her husband. "If Teddy doesn't pick him up by the tail or try to put him in a cage, he'll run in and out of the house all day long. Let's give him something to eat." They gave him a little piece of raw meat. Rikki Tikki liked it immensely, and when it was finished, he went out into the veranda and sat in the sunshine and fluffed up his fur to make it dry to the roots. Then he felt better. "There are more things to find out about in this house," he said to himself, "than all my family could find out in all their lives. I shall certainly stay and find out." He spent all that day roaming over the house. He nearly drowned himself in the bathtubs, put his nose into the ink on a writing table, and burnt it on the end of the big man's cigar, for he climbed up in the big man's lap to see how writing was done. At nightfall, He ran into Teddy's nursery to watch how kerosene lamps were lighted. And when Teddy went to bed, Rikki Tikki climbed up too. But he was a restless companion because he had to get up and attend to every noise all through the night and find out what made it. Teddy's mother and father came in, the last thing, to look at their boy, and Rikki Tikki was awake on the pillow. "I don't like that," said Teddy's mother. "He may bite the child." "He'll do no such thing," said the father. "Teddy's safer with that little beast than if he had a bloodhound to watch him. If a snake came into the nursery, now..." But Teddy's mother wouldn't think of anything so awful. Early in the morning, Rikki Tikki came to early breakfast in the veranda riding on Teddy's shoulder, and they gave him banana and some boiled egg. He sat on all their laps, one after another, because every well-brought-up mongoose always hopes to be a house mongoose someday and have rooms to run about in. And Rikki Tikki's mother, she used to live in the general's house at Sigaudi, had carefully told Rikki what to do if ever he came across white men. Then Rikki Tikki went out into the garden to see what was to be seen. It was a large garden, only half cultivated, with bushes as big as summer houses, of Marshall Neal roses, lime and orange trees, clumps of bamboo, and thickets of high grass. Rikki Tikki licked his lips. "This is a splendid hunting ground," he said, and his tail grew bottle brushy at the thought of it. And he scuttled up and down the garden, snuffing here and there, till he heard very sorrowful noises in a thorn bush. It was Darzee, the tailor bird, and his wife. They had made a beautiful nest by pulling two big leaves together and stitching them up the edges with fibers, and had filled the hollow with cotton and downy fluff. The nest swayed to and fro as they sat on the rim and cried. "What is the matter?" asked Rikki Tikki. "We are very miserable," said Darzee. "One of our babies fell out of the nest yesterday, and Nag ate him." "Hmm," said Rikki Tikki. "That is very sad. But I am a stranger here. Who is Nag?" Darzee and his wife only cowered down in the nest without answering, for from the thick grass at the foot of the brush, there came a low hiss, a horrid cold sound that made Rikki Tikki jump back 2 clear feet. Then, inch by inch, out of the grass rose up the head and spread hood of Nag, the big black cobra, and he was 5 feet long from tongue to tail. When he had lifted 1/3 of himself clear of the ground, he stayed, balancing to and fro exactly as a dandelion tuft balances in the wind. And he looked at Rikki Tikki with the wicked snake's eyes that never change their expression, whatever the snake may be thinking of. "Who is Nag?" said he. "I am Nag. The great god Brahm put his mark upon all our people when the first cobra spread his hood to keep the sun off Brahm as he slept. Look and be afraid." He spread his hood out more than ever, and Rikki Tikki saw the spectacle mark on the back of it that looks exactly like the eye part of a hook and eye fastening. He was afraid for a minute, but it is impossible for a mongoose to stay frightened for any length of time. And though Rikki Tikki had never met a live cobra before, his mother had fed him on dead ones, and he knew that all a grown mongoose's business in life was to fight and eat snakes. Nag knew that too, and at the bottom of his cold heart, he was afraid. "Well," said Rikki Tikki, and his tail began to fluff up again, "marks or no marks, do you think it is right for you to eat fledglings out of a nest?" Nag was thinking to himself and watching the least little movement in the grass behind Rikki Tikki. He knew that mongooses in the garden meant death sooner or later for him and his family, but he wanted to get Rikki Tikki off his guard, so he dropped his head a little and put it on one side. "Let us talk," he said. "You eat eggs. Why should not I eat birds?" "Behind you! Look behind you!" sang Darzee. Rikki Tikki knew better than to waste time in staring. He jumped up in the air as high as he could go, and just under him whizzed by the head of Nagaina, Nag's wicked wife. She had crept up behind him as he was talking to make an end of him, and he heard her savage hiss as the stroke missed, He came down almost across her back, and if he had been an old mongoose, he would have known then that that was the time to break her back with one bite. But he was afraid of the terrible lashing return stroke of the cobra. He bit, indeed, but he did not bite long enough, and he jumped clear of the whisking tail, leaving Nagaina torn and angry. "Wicked, wicked Darzee," said Nag, lashing up as high as he could reach toward the nest in the thorn bush. But Darzee had built it out of reach of snakes, and it only swayed to and fro. Rikki Tikki felt his eyes growing red and hot. When a mongoose's eyes grow red, he is angry. And he sat back on his tail and hind legs like a little kangaroo and looked all round him and chattered with rage. But Nag and Nagaina had disappeared into the grass. When a snake misses its stroke, it never says anything or gives any sign of what it means to do next. Rikki Tikki did not care to follow them, for he did not feel sure that he could manage two snakes at once. So he trotted off to the gravel path near the house and sat down to think. It was a serious matter for him. If you read the old books of natural history, you'll find they say that when the mongoose fights the snake and happens to get bitten, he runs off and eats some herb that cures him. That is not true. The victory is only a matter of quickness of eye and quickness of foot. Snakes blow against the mongoose's jump, and as no eye can follow the motion of a snake's head when it strikes, this makes things much more wonderful than any magic herb. Rikki Tikki knew he was a young mongoose, and it made him all the more pleased to think that he had managed to escape a blow from behind. It gave him confidence in himself, and when Teddy came running down the path, Rikki Tikki was ready to be petted. But just as Teddy was stooping, something wriggled a little in the dust, and a tiny voice said, "Be careful, I am Death." It was Karate, the dusty brown snakeling that lies for choice on the dusty earth, and his bite is as dangerous as the cobra's. But he is so small that nobody thinks of him, and so he does the more harm to people. Rikki Tikki's eyes grew red again, and he danced up to Karate with the peculiar rocking, swaying motion that he had inherited from his family. It looks very funny, but it is so perfectly balanced a gait that you can fly off from it at any angle you please, and in dealing with snakes, this is an advantage. If Rikki Tikki had only known, he was doing a much more dangerous thing than fighting Nag, for Karate is so small and can turn so quickly that unless Rikki bit him close to the back of the head, he would get the return stroke in his eye or his lip. But Rikki did not know. His eyes were all red, and he rocked back and forth, looking for a good place to hold. Karate struck out. Rikki jumped sideways and tried to run in, but the wicked little dusty gray head lashed within a fraction of his shoulder, and he had to jump over the body, and the head followed his heels close. Teddy shouted to the house, "Oh, look here, our mongoose is killing a snake." And Rikki Tikki heard a scream from Teddy's mother. His father ran out with a stick, but by the time he came up, Karate had lunged out once too far, and Rikki Tikki had sprung, jumped on the snake's back, dropped his head far between his forelegs, bitten as high up the back as he could get hold, and rolled away. That bite paralyzed Karate, and Rikki Tikki was just going to eat him up from the tail, after the custom of his family at dinner, when he remembered that a full meal makes a slow mongoose, and if he wanted all his strength and quickness ready, he must keep himself thin. He went away for a dust bath under the castor oil bushes, while Teddy's father beat the dead Karate. "What is the use of that?" thought Rikki Tikki. "I have settled it all." And then Teddy's mother picked him up from the dust and hugged him, crying that he had saved Teddy from death. And Teddy's father said that he was a providence. And Teddy looked on with big, scared eyes. Rikki Tikki was rather amused at all this fuss, which, of course, he did not understand. Teddy's mother might just as well have petted Teddy for playing in the dust. Rikki was thoroughly enjoying himself. That night at dinner, walking to and fro among the wine glasses on the table, he might have stuffed himself three times over with nice things, but he remembered Nag and Nagaina, and though it was very pleasant to be patted and petted by Teddy's mother, and to sit on Teddy's shoulder, his eyes would get red from time to time, and he would go off into his long war cry of Rick-tick-tick-ticky-tick-chick. Teddy carried him off to bed and insisted on Rikki Tikki sleeping under his chin. Rikki Tikki was too well-bred to bite or scratch, but as soon as Teddy was asleep, he went off for his nightly walk round the house. And in the dark, he ran up against Chuchundra the muskrat, creeping round by the wall. Chuchundra is a broken-hearted little beast. He whimpers and cheeps all night, trying to make up his mind to run into the middle of the room, but he never gets there. "Don't kill me," said Chuchundra, almost weeping. "Rikki Tikki, don't kill me." "Do you think a snake killer kills muskrats?" said Rikki Tikki scornfully. "Those who kill snakes get killed by snakes," said Chuchundra more sorrowfully than ever. "And how am I to be sure that Nag won't mistake me for you on some dark night?" "There's not the least danger," said Rikki Tikki. "But Nag is in the garden, and I know you won't go there." "My cousin Chua the rat told me," said Chuchundra, and then he stopped.
"Told you what?"
"Shh!
Nag is everywhere, Rikki Tikki. You should have talked to Chua in the garden."
"Well, I didn't, so you must tell me. Quick, Chuchundra, or I'll bite you." Chuchundra sat down and cried till the tears rolled off his whiskers.
"I'm a very poor man," he sobbed. "I never had spirit enough to run out into the middle of the room. I mustn't tell you anything. Can't you hear, Rikki Tikki?"
Rikki Tikki listened. The house was as still, but he thought he could just catch the faintest scratch-scratch in the world, a noise as faint as that of a wasp walking on a window pane, the dry scratch of a snake's scales on brickwork. "That's Nag or Nagaina," he said to himself, "and he is crawling into the bathroom. You're right, Chuchundra. I should have talked to Chua." He stole off to Teddy's bathroom, but there was nothing there, and then to Teddy's mother's bathroom. At the bottom of the smooth plaster wall, there was a brick pulled out to make a sluice for the bathwater. And as Rikki Tikki stole in by the masonry curb where the bath is put, he heard Nag and Nagaina whispering together outside in the moonlight.
"When the house is emptied of people," said Nagaina to her husband, "he will have to go away, and then the garden will be our own again. Go in quietly and remember that the big man who killed Karate is the first one to bite. Then come out and tell me, and we will hunt for Rikki Tikki together."
"But are you sure that there is anything to be gained by killing the people?" said Nag.
"Everything. When there are no people in the bungalow, did we have any mongoose in the garden? So long as the bungalow is empty, we are king and queen of the garden. And remember that as soon as our eggs in the melon bed hatch, as they may tomorrow, our children will need room and quiet."
"I had not thought of that," said Nag.
"I will go, but there is no need that we should hunt for Rikki Tikki afterwards. I will kill the big man and his wife and the child if I can, and come away quietly. Then the bungalow will be empty, and Rikki Tikki will go." Now Rikki Tikki tingled all over with rage and hatred at this, and then Nag's head came through the sluice, and his 5 feet of cold body followed it. Angry as he was, Rikki Tikki was very frightened as he saw the size of the big cobra. Nag coiled himself up, raised his head, and looked into the bathroom in the dark, and Rikki could see his eyes glitter. "Now, if I kill him here, Nagaina will know, and if I fight him on the open floor, the odds are in his favor. What am I to do?" said Rikki Tikki Tavi. Nag waved to and fro, and then Rikki Tikki heard him drinking from the biggest water jar that was used to fill the bath. "That is good," said the snake. "Now, when Karate was killed, the big man had a stick. He may have that stick still, but when he comes in to bathe in the morning, he will not have a stick, and I shall wait here till he comes. Nagaina, do you hear me? I shall wait here in the cool till daytime." There was no answer from outside, so Rikki Tikki knew Nagaina had gone away. Nag coiled himself down, coil by coil, round the bulge at the bottom of the water jar, and Rikki Tikki stayed still as death. After an hour, he began to move, muscle by muscle, towards the jar. Nag was asleep, and Rikki Tikki looked at his big back, wondering which would be the best place for a good hold. If I don't break his back at the first jump, said Ricky, he can still fight. And if he fights, oh, Ricky. He looked at the thickness of the neck below the hood, but that was much too much for him. And a bite near the tail would only make Nag savage. It must be the head, he said at last. The head above the hood. And when I am once there, I must not let go. Then he jumped. The head was lying a little clear of the water jar under the curve of it. And as his teeth met, Ricky braced his back against the bulge of the red earthenware to hold down the head. This gave him just 1 second's purchase, and he made the most of it. Then he was battered to and fro as a rat is shaken by a dog, to and fro on the floor, up and down and round in great circles. But his eyes were red, and he held on as the body cartwhipped over the floor, upsetting the tin dipper and the soap dish and the flesh brush, and bagged against the tin side of the bath. As he held, he closed his jaws tighter and tighter, for he made sure he would be banged to death, and for the honor of his family, he preferred to be found with his teeth locked. He was dizzy, aching, and felt shaken to pieces when something went off like a thunderclap just behind him. A hot wind knocked him senseless, and red fire singed his fur. The big man had been wakened by the noise and had fired both barrels of a shotgun into Nag just behind the hood. Ricky Tikki held on with his eyes shut, for now he was quite sure he was dead. But the head did not move, and the big man picked him up and said, "It's the mongoose again, Alice. The little chap has saved our lives now." Then Teddy's mother came in with a very white face and saw what was left of Nag, and Ricky Tikki dragged himself to Teddy's bedroom and spent half the rest of the night shaking himself tenderly to find out whether he was really broken into 40 pieces as he fancied. When morning came, he was very stiff, but well pleased with his doings. "Now I have Nagaina to settle with, and she will be worse than 5 Nags, and there's no knowing when the egg she spoke of will hatch. Goodness, I must go and see Darcy," he said. Without waiting for breakfast, Ricky Tikki ran to the thorn bush where Darcy was singing a song of triumph at the top of his voice. The news of Nag's death was all over the garden, for the sweeper had thrown the body on the rubbish heap. "Oh, you stupid tuft of feathers," said Ricky Tikki angrily. "Is this the time to sing? Nag is dead, is dead, is dead," sang Darcy. "The valiant Ricky Tikki caught him by the head and held fast. The big man brought the bang stick, and Nag fell in 2 pieces. He will never eat my babies again." "Now, all that's true enough, but where's Nagaina?" said Ricky Tikki, looking carefully around him. "Nagaina came to the bathroom sluice and called for Nag," Darcy went on, "and Nag came out on the end of a stick. The sweeper picked him up on the end of a stick and threw him upon the rubbish heap. Let us sing about the great, the red-eyed Ricky Tikki." And Darcy filled his throat and sang. "If I could get up to your nest, I'd roll your babies out," said Ricky Tikki. "You don't know when to do the right thing at the right time. You're safe enough in your nest there, but it's war for me down here." "Stop singing a minute, Darcy. For the great, beautiful Ricky Tikki's sake, I will stop," said Darcy. "What is it, oh killer of the terrible Nag? Where is Nagaina for the 3rd time?" "On the rubbish heap by the stables, mourning for Nag." "Great, oh Ricky Tikki with the white teeth." "Oh, bother my white teeth. Have you ever heard where she keeps her eggs?" "In the melon bed on the end nearest the wall, where the sun strikes nearly all day. She hid them there weeks ago." "And you never thought it worthwhile to tell me? The end nearest the wall, you said. Ricky Tikki, you're not going to eat her eggs?" "No, not eat exactly. Darcy, if you have a grain of sense, you will fly off to the stables and pretend that your wing is broken, and let Nagaina chase you away to this bush. I must get to the melon bed, and if I went there now, she'd see me." Darcy was a feather-brained little fellow who could never hold more than 1 idea at a time in his head. And just because he knew that Nagaina's children were born in eggs like his own, he didn't think at first that it was fair to kill them. But his wife was a sensible bird, and she knew that cobra's eggs meant young cobras later on. So she flew off from the nest and left Darcy to keep the babies warm and continue his song about the death of Nag. Darcy was very like a man in some ways. She fluttered in front of Nagaina by the rubbish heap and cried out, "Oh, my wing is broken. The boy in the house threw a stone at me and broke it." Then she fluttered more desperately than ever. Nagaina lifted up her head and hissed, "You warned Rikki Tikki when I would have killed him. Indeed and truly, you've chosen a bad place to be lame in." And she moved toward Darzee's wife, slipping along over the dust.
"The boy broke it with a stone," shrieked Darzee's wife.
"Well, it may be some consolation to you when you're dead to know that I shall settle accounts with the boy. My husband lies on the rubbish heap this morning, but before night, the boy in the house will lie very still. What's the use of running away? I'm sure to catch you. Little fool, look at me."
Darzee's wife knew better than to do that, for a bird who looks at a snake's eyes gets so frightened that she cannot move. Darzee's wife fluttered on, piping sorrowfully and never leaving the ground, and Nagaina quickened her pace. Rikki Tikki heard them going up the path from the stables, and he raced for the end of the melon patch near the wall. There, in the warm litter above the melons, very cunningly hidden, he found 25 eggs, about the size of a bantam's eggs, but with whitish skins instead of shells. "I was not a day too soon," he said, for he could see the baby cobras curled up inside the skin, and he knew that the minute they were hatched, they could each kill a man or a mongoose. He bit off the tops of the eggs as fast as he could, taking care to crush the young cobras, and turned over the litter from time to time to see whether he had missed any. At last there were only 3 eggs left, and Rikki Tikki began to chuckle to himself when he heard Darzee's wife screaming.
"Rikki Tikki, I led Nagaina toward the house, and she has gone into the veranda, and... oh, come quickly, she means killing."
Rikki Tikki smashed 2 eggs and tumbled backward down the melon bed with the 3rd egg in his mouth, and scuttled to the veranda as hard as he could put his foot to the ground. Teddy and his mother and father were there at early breakfast, but Rikki Tikki saw that they were not eating anything. They sat stone still, and their faces were white. Nagaina was coiled up on the matting by Teddy's chair, within easy striking distance of Teddy's bare leg, and she was swaying to and fro, singing a song of triumph.
"Son of the big man that killed Nag," she hissed. "Stay still. I am not ready yet. Wait a little. Keep very still, all you 3. If you move, I strike. And if you do not move, I strike. Oh, foolish people who killed my Nag."
Teddy's eyes were fixed on his father, and all his father could do was to whisper,
"Sit still, Teddy. You mustn't move. Teddy, keep still."
Then Rikki Tikki came up and cried, "Turn round, Nagaina, turn and fight."
"All in good time," said she, without moving her eyes. "I will settle my account with you presently. Look at your friends, Rikki Tikki. They are still and white. They are afraid. They dare not move, and if you come a step nearer, I strike."
"Look at your eggs," said Rikki Tikki, "in the melon bed near the wall. Go and look, Nagaina." The big snake turned half round and saw the egg on the veranda.
"Give it to me," she said.
Rikki Tikki put his paws, one on each side of the egg, and his eyes were blood red.
"What price for a snake's egg, for a young cobra, for a young king cobra, for the last, the very last of the brood? The ants are eating all the others down by the melon bed."
Nagaina spun clear around, forgetting everything for the sake of the one egg, and Rikki Tikki saw Teddy's father shoot out a big hand, catch Teddy by the shoulder, and drag him across the little table with the teacups, safe and out of reach of Nagaina.
"Tricked, tricked, tricked, Rick, chick, chick, chick," chuckled Rikki Tikki. "The boy is safe, and it was I that caught Nag by the hood last night in the bathroom."
Then he began to jump up and down, all 4 feet together, his head close to the floor.
"He threw me to and fro, but he could not shake me off. He was dead before the big man blew him in 2. I did it. Rikki tick 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 tick. It was I. Come then, Nagaina. Come and fight with me. You shall not be a widow long."
Nagaina saw that she had lost her chance of killing Teddy, and the egg lay between Rikki Tikki's paws.
"Give me the egg, Rikki Tikki. Give me the last of my eggs, and I will go away and never come back," she said, lowering her hood.
"Yes, you will go away, and you will never come back, for you will go to the rubbish heap with Nag. Fight, widow." The big man has gone for his gun. Fight! Rikki Tikki was bounding all round Nagaina, keeping just out of reach of her stroke, his little eyes like hot coals. Nagaina gathered herself together and flung out at him. Rikki Tikki jumped up and backwards. Again and again she struck, and each time her head came with a whack on the matting of the veranda, and she gathered herself together like a watch spring. Then Rikki Tikki danced in a circle to get behind her, and Nagaina spun round to keep her head to his head, so that the rustle of her tail on the mat leaves blown along by the wind. He had forgotten the egg. It still lay on the veranda, and Nagaina came nearer and nearer to it, till at last, while Rikki Tikki was drawing breath, she caught it in her mouth, turned to the veranda steps, and flew like an arrow down the path with Rikki Tikki right behind her. Now when a cobra runs for her life, she goes like a whiplash flicked across a horse's neck. Rikki Tikki knew he must catch her, or all the trouble would begin again. She headed straight for the long grass by the thorn bush, and as he was running, Rikki Tikki heard Darzee still singing his foolish little song of triumph. But Darzee's wife was wiser. She flew off her nest as Nagaina came along and flapped her wings about Nagaina's head. If Darzee had helped, they might have turned her, but Nagaina only lowered her hood and went on. Still, the instant's delay brought Rikki Tikki up to her, and as she plunged into the rat hole where she and Nag used to live, his little white teeth were clenched on her tail, and he went down with her. And very few mongooses, however wise and old they may be, care to follow a cobra into its hole. It was dark in the hole, and Rikki Tikki never knew when it might open out and give Nagaina room to turn and strike at him. He held on savagely and stuck out his feet to act as brakes on the dark slope of the hot, moist earth. Then the grass by the mouth of the hole stopped waving, and Darzee said, "It is all over with Rikki Tikki. We must sing his death song. Valiant Rikki Tikki is dead, for Nagaina will surely kill him underground." And so he sang a very mournful song that he made up on the spur of the moment. And just as he got to the most touching part, the grass quivered again, and Rikki Tikki, covered with dirt, dragged himself out of the hole, leg by leg, licking his whiskers. Darzee stopped with a little shout. Rikki Tikki shook some of the dust out of his fur and sneezed. "It is all over," he said. "The widow will never come out again." And the red ants that lived between the grass stems heard him and began to troop down one after another to see if he had spoken the truth. Rikki Tikki curled himself up in the grass and slept where he was. Slept and slept till it was late in the afternoon, for he had done a hard day's work. "Now," he said when he awoke, "I will go back to the house. Tell the coppersmith, Darzee, and he will tell the garden that Nagaina is dead." The coppersmith is a bird who makes a noise exactly like the beating of a little hammer on a copper pot. And the reason he is always making it is because he is the town crier to every Indian garden and tells all the news to everybody who cares to listen. As Rikki Tikki went up the path, he heard his attention notes like a tiny dinner gong, and then the steady ding-dong-tock, "Nag is dead, dong-dong, Nagaina is dead, ding-dong-tock." That set all the birds in the garden singing and the frogs croaking, for Nag and Nagaina used to eat frogs as well as little birds. When Rikki got to the house, Teddy and Teddy's mother, she looked very white still, for she had been fainting, and Teddy's father came out and almost cried over him, and that night he ate all that was given him till he could eat no more, and went to bed on Teddy's shoulder, where Teddy's mother saw him when she came to look late at night. "He saved our lives and Teddy's life," she said to her husband. "Just think, he saved all our lives." Rikki Tikki woke up with a jump, for mongooses are light sleepers. "Oh, it's you," said he. "What are you bothering for? All the cobras are dead, and if they weren't, I'm here." Rikki Tikki had a right to be proud of himself, but he did not grow too proud, and he kept that garden as a mongoose should keep it, with tooth and jump and spring and bite, till never a cobra dared show its head inside its walls.
Singer and tailor, am I?
joys that I know. Proud of my little to the sky. Proud of the house that I sold. Over and under, so I weave my music, so I weave the house that I sold. Sing to your fledglings again. Mother, I lift up your head. Evil that played us a slime. Death in the garden lie dead. Terror that hid in the roses is impotent, flung on the dunghill and dead.
And that was Ricky Tikki Tavi. We'd like to thank Mishkin. We couldn't fit everything in here. We got to get out. Mishkin did the music at the beginning of the end, and we had Woody Creek doing the reading for our Damon Runyon story. We also like to thank all the guys at the 3D Radio Theater for the cat that walks by himself. So this is Fortunato. We'll be back again on the third Monday of next month with a Damon Runyon story.